This week we have a subject, of course, it's sunspots. However, that does not mean that you cannot ask any type of pertinent question. And pertinent means you need to know the answer, nothing special. It can be anything from what I need to paint the pole, all the way up to some really fancy stuff that I have no idea what you're talking about, which is most anything anymore. But anyway, if anybody's got any questions about any particular thing, whether it be licensing all the way through what kind of equipment do I buy, now would be a good time to ask. Anybody got any questions, please come. Call now.
80QBM.
Go right ahead, my friend.
One of these days, maybe not tonight, but I'm going to looking for some advice on an HF antenna I'm going to have to be purchasing here pretty soon, and just want to find out what would be a good one.
Oh, that's fine. We open this up to questions, and the questions are the most important right now. The sunspot thing, we can do this anytime. So what is your actual question?
Well, I'm not sure which type of, they got so many different antennas out there, I'm not sure which is a good one to be working with.
Well, we've got a lot of experts on here, but I know the first question they're going to ask, what do you want to do with it?
Well, I'm going to be eventually buying that Yaesu 991 radio, and it's got the HF band. I'm going to need an antenna for it.
W2MIC, Mark, you want to help Michael out there a little bit?
W2MIC. Well, the first set of questions are, where do you live? Are you in a homeowner association restricted area? How much real estate do you have? And how tall are your trees?
Well, I have, so far, no restrictions. In this area. I live in Windsor.
35 foot.
Did we lose you?
Nope. I asked four questions and got one answer. How much real estate do you have?
Not a lot. I mean, just a normal size lot. It's probably 50 feet long, maybe longer, 100, I'd say maybe 100.
One-story house or two?
No, it's just a one-story, it's a ranch house.
Joe, the best antenna for his situation, given that he has the real estate, would be a Wyndham. So it's your turn.
Much luck as I had with the Wyndham, I'm going to pass to KI0KN. James actually got one that's functional. I could not get mine to work very well. James, you want to comment on that?
Well, I'm a bigger fan of the newer version of the Wyndham called the Carolina Wyndham, which is a dipole that is fed about 66% off of one end, has a 4-to-1 balun at the top, and then has a length of coax and then a 1-to-1 isolation choke in the feed line. The station that was asking the question, do you have any idea what bands that you're trying to cover? How low in the bands do you want to go?
Well, I haven't done a lot of research on the radio. I mean, it does cover quite a few bands. I think it's 160 to 6 meters. And then, of course, it also has your 2-meter 70 centimeter, but that's another antenna, which I already have that antenna.
Well, you could start with, it depends on if you have the room for an 80-meter Carolina Wyndham or not, but a 40-meter Carolina Wyndham is 25 foot on one side, 41 feet on the other side, and has 10 foot of vertical coax. So it's just wire, 25 feet of wire on one side, 10 feet of wire on the other, to a 4-to-1 ballon at the top, and then you hang 10 feet of coax between the 4-to-1 ballon and either a 1-to-1 choke or an appropriately sized number of coils of coax to form a choke 10 feet down, and then the coax continues there whatever length to your transceiver. Does that description make sense?
Probably not. I mean, it's all new to me on the HF side, but I mean, I don't want to take up all your time on this. About this, I can always get a hold of talk later about it.
Well, as a starting point, Google Carolina Wyndham, and specifically look at a company called Radio Works. It's RadioWorks.com. They have quite a bit of information with some fairly detailed sort of cartoonish type drawings showing all the dimensions and everything else. But W-H-I-J-I, I think that's it. You might just search W-8 and Carolina Wyndham as well. He's got a very, very good explanation of how a Wyndham works, while the Radio Works site has many drawings. Why don't you start there, take a look at that, and then come back to us with some more questions.
All right, hey, I got that. I'll check into that and I'll get back.
Does the 991 have its own tuner?
Yeah, it's got a built-in tuner.
Okay, well, the IC7100 does not, but it's a better radio, in my opinion.
Well, I can take a look at that. I haven't bought one yet, but I've been kind of looking at them. Oh, I'm going to do some more research.
Never worry about asking us a question. Just because we got a topic does not necessarily mean we're going to use that entirely up. So please ask those questions, because that's what we're here for. That's the most important part about this thing, is that when I pick a topic, it's basically something that we're going to talk about if we have time. The questions are premier for this type of thing, so please remember that.
All right. I know the HF side that I haven't dealt with yet is quite a bit to it for antennas. So I'm just going to have to do a little more checking and find something. I'm even maybe thinking of vertical. I don't know if that's any good either.
Well, I've got kind of both. I've got the hex beam, of course, you know, and then I've got a 680 out here. And I like the verticals because they don't take as much real estate up. And if you buy the right one, and I want to warn you about that, buy the right one, because some of them say that they don't need radials, but they really do.
All right, thank you. I'm going to do, like I say, check in on that too.
Can I throw some more in, Joe?
Well, certainly, OJ, go right ahead.
Okay. I don't know whether an internal antenna matcher would be fully okay for the Wyndham or not. Are there places in them, in our common ham bands, that would necessitate an external tuner? 'Cause some of the internal tuners don't tune much over, or match, I should say, over a 3-to-1 mismatch. So that's the other thing that you'll have to throw in there. I have not played with Wyndhams myself. Stick up a good old resonant inverted V. Yeah, you might have to run more wire for each band if you want or something, but I have not played with Wyndham, so looks like KN will have to do the rest of the answering on that and your common internal matcher.
Does anybody else have any more comments for Michael?
W2MIC.
Oh, go right ahead, Mark, please.
Well, the advantages of the Wyndhams and their brothers, the Carolina Wyndhams, is they are a single piece of wire. They're fed with a single piece of coax, not ladder line. The properly tuned ones will in fact run on all of the ham bands without the need for a tuner. So if you're just starting out and you have a radio, but you don't have a schnazzy transmitter match or tuner as they're called, a Wyndham will get you up on at least a portion of all of the different ham bands. So it's really the least expensive way to get started and get up on all the bands, subject to the maximum length of the antenna, which in turn will dictate how low the band you can get is, because obviously 160 meters is a lot of real estate. You can very reasonably in your real estate do 40 meters and on up, and depending on what the diagonal looks like on your real estate, maybe 880.
GES. There might be a double, but I got N7GS. Go ahead, Kevin.
Good evening, everybody. I joined in late, so I've missed a lot of what's been going on, but I pricked up on Wyndham and that sort of thing. So I'm just going off of Mark's comment. I just recently put up a Wyndham here. And it is indeed very low SWR on a good portion of 80, 40, 20, 10, and even 6, I believe. I don't have the actual specs, but it was, within internal tuner range, but still quite low over a good portion of those bands. No exacts right now, but that's one thing somebody had asked me about, and I have yet to do that, but we were pretty impressed with it that way.
Michael, I know a little bit about that antenna because I actually gave it to Kevin. And when I bought that thing, I actually bought it off eBay for 40 or 50 bucks. It wasn't expensive. Actually, maybe even less than that. And I asked the guy, because he was showing me diagrams. Let me shut this off. I asked the guy when he told me, he was showing me diagrams of 1.6 and 1.4. I asked him what kind of tuner he was using with those things. He said none. And when I got it home, I hooked it up to a 900 that I've got here, and he was right. The worst case, I had a 1.5, and I think we could tune that out, or even why bother? It's that low. So, that one was a really good one. And these antenna tuners, I've got one on the 900, got one on the 1200 internally. They'll do maybe 3-1 if you're lucky. Anything over that, you need something a little bit bigger and better for that.
All right, well, I'm going to check into that, and like I say, this is the HF side is all new to me for antennas. And I'll see what I can come up with.
Thank you very much for the question. Anybody else have any questions for tonight's net? Please call.
November 0, Whiskey, India, Quebec.
Did you have any comments about Michael and the Wyndham or Carolina Wyndham antenna?
I think I had one some time ago, and the main thing I found was a weakness in the midline mounting point, so that might be something to check on, is how you're going to hang it if you're going to hang it. Otherwise, I think a vertical fits in low real estate, but it, like you said before, it probably is about to have radials on it to be a good image plane. And if you do that, then vertical with a remote antenna tuner would be preferable, because then you could convert coax from the tuner back to the radio, and the tuner would do the matching of the antenna.
Hey, are there any other questions or comments for our board tonight? Please call. Let's move along to our topic for this evening, which is sunspots and propagation. And is there anybody who'd like to start this out? Carrie, I always start out with you. Do you have any comments about this?
Well, as has been said before, sunspots cause different ionization of the ionosphere, and the and that makes things sting, because the ionosphere is a reflecting surface for lower frequencies, so I'll just put it at that. Now, Mark, W2MIC, probably has a whole book on those subjects, so you might ask him next.
Okay, Mark, you're up if you'd like to.
W2MIC. Well, the fairly simplified explanation is there is this thing called the sun. And the sun emits particles called ions. And these particles are called the solar wind. And they are particles that zoom out from the sun and come and hit the Earth and get past the Van Allen belt, and one of their actions is to charge up ions in the layer of the atmosphere called, wait for it, the ionosphere. The second thing that the sun does is it has sunspots, and we'll talk a little more about those in a bit. And sunspots emit massive amounts of ultraviolet rays, and the ultraviolet rays hit the ionosphere and charge up ions in the ionosphere. And an ion is just an atom that's missing one or more electrons, so it's positively charged. Radio waves go up from your antenna and hit the ionosphere, and if the ionosphere is well charged, your radio waves will bounce and come back down to Earth. And this bouncing process may repeat several times. If the ionosphere is not well charged, your radio waves will not bounce, and they'll just keep right on going. And there is the term called the maximum usable frequency, and this is the frequency that will bounce back. Higher, more megahertz will go through. I'm going to drop and come back up. Lower frequencies will bounce. Generally speaking, we see solar cycles where the sun goes to maximum output and then down to minimum output, and that's about an 11-year cycle. It's really about 7 to 15, but 11's a pretty good guess. Right now, we are on the lower part of the cycle and descending, and thus far in 2016, we have had 20 days with no sunspots. That's bad. We like sunspots. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing, where if there's lots of solar wind and or lots of sunspots, the ionosphere will become so laden with charge that it becomes chaotic, and everything, radio waves just get scrambled when they hit. So it's kind of a Goldilocks thing. Not too cold, just right, not too hot. There is an excellent website called solarham.net that discusses all of this stuff, and it takes the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration data and translates it into ham speak for what bands are going to be open, when, how far, etc., etc. Again, I'm going to drop. generally speaking, for those of us who say, well, when is 10 meters going to be open? 10 meters, which is pretty much the highest frequency HF band, is open if there are more than 100 sunspots per day. The monthly average for this past October was 30. So 10 kind of sucks. Now, these things fluctuate madly. They are not constant. They are not level. Even though on average 10 is shut down, 10 may open up briefly depending on the day and the number of sunspots. So the best way to go is to go look at solarham.net and to learn to listen for beacons. Those are permanently transmitting radio stations all around the world, to discover what you can hear and whom you can talk with. Back to Net to Joe.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. KI0KN, any other comments, James?
Well, Mark did an excellent job there. And I don't know if it's too early in the conversation or not, but I'm going to go a little tiny bit deeper. And one of the sites that he mentioned, there's another site that also does banners called hamqsl.com. The one he mentioned and this one are probably the two most popular. But they have, both of those sites will give you basically a quick view of what conditions are. And one of the things that is important to look at is the geomagnetic field activity. And they also rate the noise level, the average signal noise level. Like, for example, if you look at the conditions right at this very moment, and by the way, they're updated approximately, and I don't know how often the banners are updated, but the measurements are taken about every 3 hours for magnetic field and X-ray measurements and all that other good stuff. And our closest place to measure them is right here in Boulder, Colorado, the recycle here. If you look right now, we'll see that the sunspot number is 16 currently. The signal noise level is S3 to S4, and the geomagnetic field is active. And Mark mentioned the MUF, the maximum usable frequency, right now is showing at 23.01 megahertz. So that is kind of a guideline, not an absolute maximum, you know, a written in stone thing, but it's usually fairly accurate. I think what you'll find when things like what is happening right now, where we're just starting to see the beginning of a pretty good solar flare that happened about 6:30 last night our time, just the wave of that solar flare is starting to hit Earth right now and cause much disruption to our geomagnetic field. That 23 megahertz is a pretty far stretch from what's actually usable. I'm going to let the conversation go for just a little bit longer, and then once we get a chance to go all the way around, we'll talk about SFI, A, and K numbers, as well as some X-ray stuff. But with that, Joe, I'm going to leave everybody confused and go back to you, KI0KN.
KI0TYU, thank you very much for that. Mark, can you give me that website again, please?
Break, please.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, you quoted a solar flare. The sun hasn't flared in about 3 weeks, if not longer. It's a CME from a coronal mass ejection. It started from a coronal hole. Actually, it's a coronal rip in the sun's corona.
W0LED. KD0U speaks.
Go ahead, Mikey.
Dave, I thought that was a filament eruption.
It may have been, but what I saw on the SWPC site today is blaming it on a tear and a coronal hole. The last one was a filament break, filament eruption. I didn't read everything in SWPC today, but they had quoted a rip in the corona.
Copy that. I might have confused it with the last one.
Denny, there he is. Me. Continue.
Thank you for that. Mark, could you give me that website, please?
Yes. Solarham, all one word, .net. SolarHam.net.
Thank you very much for that. K0OJ, any comments? Go ahead.
Nothing for now. K0OJ.
Yeah, you can get ahead of all of the ham stuff by referencing SWPC, which is out of Boulder, Solar Weather Prediction Center. There is a plethora of information on there, tutorial write-ups. It's really good, and of course, all of the latest data from both Earth, the magnetometers, including the Boulder magnetometer, Corinna magnetometer, everything and anything you want to know, including tutorials from news level understandability to PhD understandability, but it's all there, W0LED.
No, anybody else care to comment?
The question was asked, before the internet and fancy radios, what did we do then? How did we know where to tune and listen?
I think a lot of us experience with EHF bands, and we used to take sporadic E openings, which you can get off the Boulder Ionogram, which Terry runs. We used to just go from experience. Certainly September, October is prime time for sporadic E's. We don't know why. Changes between summer and fall, is it time for aurora? We don't really know why, but experience. And science, of course, is growing. Our probes get finer and finer. We can dig deeper and deeper.
N7GES.
N7GES, go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I don't know how long the beacon system has been around, but there's a very sophisticated set of beacons that transmit on a very regular basis all over the HF bands, and certainly that's another, would be another good way, and I don't know how long they've been around. If they've been around, well, they've certainly been around longer than the internet. I remember hearing them as a little kid occasionally, and so, you know, certainly that was a way of having some idea of the areas you could reach, even though it didn't give you solar values and stuff like that, but it certainly would give you ideas of band openings.
T7ABB.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there is another website that helps in terms of predictions of propagation. It's voacap.com. It's Voice of America, and I'm not sure exactly what the CAP is, but it's basically that they have a program on there that will do point-to-point predictions in terms of what the propagation is going to be on a given frequency. But there's a downloadable program that's there, and it ties in apparently with the system that of information that they're pulling from NOAA and everybody else. So it might be something that's beneficial to people that are gonna shoot for specific areas that they want to try to make contacts in. K7ABB.
Yeah, another one too is the Australian HAP charts, H-A-P charts. And ultimately, all of this is derived from the ionosondes around the world, basically ionospheric sounders. We have one in Boulder,
Let's see, there's one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, one in Puerto Rico, and of course that is being fine-grained today in a system they call Viper. Terry, who sometimes frequents the Astronomy Net tomorrow, knows all about that because he runs them. He's in Austin right now. WZ0LED, but the Australian HAP charts are very good. They're updated hourly.
W2MIC.
W2MIC, go ahead, Mark.
To directly address the question of what did we do before the internet, another answer was we tuned up our receivers and listened for shortwave broadcasts, such as the BBC and the Voice of America. That is only limited information, but if you could hear the broadcasts from Africa, Europe, Asia, Indonesia, Australia, New Zealand, etc., you can get a pretty good idea where the low bands were open.
Yep, and for Sporadic E, monitor the old Channel 2 video carrier. In this area, we have fortunate enough to have a Channel 2 DTV transmitter out in Grand Junction, which you can monitor for Sporadic E and meteors. But like Mark said, we used to turn a dial outside the ham bands. Best indicator around.
KI0KN.
KI0KN, go ahead, James.
So, an awful lot of technical stuff just got thrown around there. And one of the things, this is related but a little sidetrack. One of the things that I want to say that both Randy and Dave were spot on. You turn, you know, one of the best things you can do, turn off your computer, turn on your radio, go to the bottom of the band, and slowly start tuning up and see what you hear. Mark just mentioned that 10 meters is often not open until typically we have 100 sunspots. October 30th, which was what? Sunday, I believe. A week ago Sunday, the SESC sunspot number was 12. There were 12 sunspots, and the solar index, the SFI, was 76. If you look at the little banners on the solar pages, they all said 10, 12 meters, all closed. And yet, I made a successful CW contact on 10 meters with Chatham Island, Zulu Lima 7 Gulf. So 10 meters was absolutely open, and that is an island that's about 400 miles off the coast of New Zealand. So don't always believe. You can use those numbers as a guide. You can use little banners as a guide, but just turning the radio on and start scanning the bands is one of the best things you can do. It's always interesting to know more about those numbers and those banners, and you can absolutely, the VOACAP site, I use that a lot, that Randy mentioned, for predictions, but nothing beats the old just listen to the band. See what's on. Sometimes you'll be surprised. There'll be some rare countries on there that everyone else didn't get, and they're just sitting there calling CQ because everyone looks at the numbers and says, oh, the band's closed. Guess some of the best countries you'll ever get will be in that situation. KI0CAN, back to you, Joe.
If you got the thing on, you just will use it. I'm kind of the same way. I'll look at the bands, and it is what it is, but then you get on because you're here, so why not? Any other comments or questions?
The comment was made, yes, probably we rely a lot too much on technology. Driving a semi, you probably have 11 meters HF, one step away from 10 meters. Sometimes 11 meters is going crazy, and you listen on 10 and nothing. And perhaps people are relying too much on the internet and saying, well, why bother to turn the radio on? And here's one for you, 27065, I think that's right. Tune into that. If that's hopping, 10 should be also. And then asked for a repeat from Dave about the Australian website.
Yeah, I got the computer shut down right now, but if you search on, I think it's the Australian HAP charts, H-A-P, Honolulu, Alpha, Papa. HAP Church. They have a very nice presentation of the MUF for a given distance. It's in color, and it's really, I think, one of the best done online. It's a better presentation than even SWPC puts out, and I don't let Terry hear that, but it is. It's all based on the ionosondes. It's the Australian HAP, H-A-P, charts.
Thanks for that. I do appreciate that, because we rely, you're absolutely right, we rely a lot on computers and various other things, where you and your truck, you're kind of winging it, so, and we should do that too. I have never really tried the upper bands, basically because everything says they're closed, but I need to force myself to do that, and you're absolutely right. Any other comments that anybody would like to make, go ahead. Go ahead, Mikey.
So I got a good one. So when solar flares are active, like tomorrow afternoon, when does it enhance any of the frequencies? Or what frequencies does it enhance, if it does at all?
I can take that, LEV.
Go ahead, Dave, LEV, go ahead.
Yeah, number one, I'll make a general comment. Amateurs are prone to look at the sun and everything sunspot this, sunspot that. That is not true. If you get a sunspot and the thing erupts, the first thing you'll notice is what we call a SID, sudden ionospheric disturbance. What happens when a sunspot erupts is the Earth is bathed in copious amounts of X-rays, which does a wonderful job of penetrating into the lower ionosphere, generates lots of absorption. HF many times will go dead. It's much like a high-altitude nuclear burst. The ionosphere ultimately comes back. I've recorded several here that have lasted hours. The larger the release and the greater the flux of X-rays, the longer the SID will last. That is the main impact of a sunspot eruption. Coronal mass ejections are what we're due for tomorrow. Those are high-speed solar material. Lots of protons, solar protons, ionized hydrogen, and other particulate matter. That interacts with the magnetosphere, and the magnetosphere moves around. Currents form in the Earth. The corona magnetometer reports that. That's entirely different. What's bad from a solar sunspot eruption, solar flare, what's bad for HF is usually great for VHF. It's responsible for generating E-layer and propagation on VHF while it shuts down HF. CMEs affect predominantly the magnetosphere, which of course greatly affects HF propagation, makes it very unstable, rather unpredictable. It basically warps the magnetosphere, and HF can get very noisy, very unpredictable. I've jabbered enough. Zero LED.
Comments? KN0KN, did you want to continue on with whatever you wanted to add to this?
Radio, everything is not due to sunspots. Right now, the sun is almost spotless, but yet we've got a CME incoming that's going to impact the magnetosphere, that's going to upset HF quite badly, because it's almost a direct hit. Everything is not due to sunspots.
I doubled with you. Please come back with that information.
Oh, some of us are repeat. It's considered general knowledge, but incorrect knowledge in amateur radio, that everything from the sun is due to sunspots. That is not true. Solar flares, sunspots, coronal mass ejections all affect HF and VHF propagation to some extent or the other. But not everything is due to sunspots. There are three main things that I've mentioned that affect HF propagation and to some extent VHF. Everything isn't due to sunspots.
clean that concept out of the gray matter. W0LEV.
Comments?
D0KNJ, question.
Go right ahead, sir, with your question.
When these sunspots or CMEs take place, do we have issues communicating with our satellites, which are outside of the atmosphere?
Yes, we do, sometimes big time. And a good upset from a CME can skew GPS data enough that it's very inaccurate. Sometimes on a good solid CME, we'll even get charge deposited on satellites where things got to discharge between this half and that half of the satellite, or the panel and the bulk of the satellite. You'll actually get arcs, which can do a very nasty job on upsetting things. Cosmic rays are the other thing. We've seen that on the Mars orbiters here of recent, where it actually gets into the memory, produces an alpha particle or something or another that changes a bit, and they go into a safe shutdown. But fortunately, we have a fairly dense atmosphere that protects us for the most part, but the satellites out there do indeed experience all of it.
Any other comments?
KI0KN.
KI0KN, go ahead.
So it's kind of funny that the GPS question was brought up, because we're actually already starting to see some of the GPS inaccuracies, even though not a lot of the particles have hit us yet from that CME. But enough have that there's already a little bit of disruption to the GPS signals. We were watching it pretty close today, as a matter of fact. And we kind of did a little experiment at work this afternoon watching to see what the inaccuracies. A lot of GPS receivers will show you the inaccuracy or confidence of its accuracy. And a typical new cell phone, you know, you've got, you know, oftentimes it'll be within 6 or 10 feet. And today, during random times, we were seeing 60 to 180 foot inaccuracies. Further, if you listen to the Buckhorn repeaters, either the 146.625 or the 447.700, the receiver voter system that is set up, where we have two voters on Horsetooth, and so we have two receivers on Horsetooth, and then we have the two receivers on Buckhorn, and whichever one hears the signal better is the one that will be retransmitted at Buckhorn. That system is actually tied with there are very accurate GPS receivers at both locations that they timestamp the signal as they're going from mountain to mountain, so that Buckhorn can reassemble the right pieces of audio to compare. If you are listening to the Buckhorn repeaters, as I was this afternoon for a while, you'll hear the repeater come up in ID in Morse code, and then shortly thereafter you'll hear OK in Morse code, da-da-da-da-da-da, and then the club call sign again. We were actually losing GPS lock on Horsetooth Mountain for just a second or two here and there, and we believe that it's probably due to the beginning of this flare hitting us. KI0KN.
I really love it. W0LED.
Comments? Well, I have a question for anyone who care to answer it. As we all know, the last couple, 3 weeks have been kind of bad. What's the predictions for anything in the future getting better?
Well, to put it in one short word, abysmal. We're going into a solar minimum, and this last maximum cycle 24 was pretty much of a wimped out cycle. Not too good for the higher HF frequencies, in short.
went downhill a lot faster than a lot of people expected after a pretty weak high this time. I can't remember the exact years, but this was the lowest peak since a long time ago, in the 80s, I think. The thing that's important to remember, though, is that when the solar cycle is up, you can darn near walk to your radio and use whatever you want, you know, the higher bands. You know, 10 meters is going to be open a lot during the daytime. 15 meters is going to be open a lot. 20 is kind of the go-to band that is the most survivable for high and low season. And then when the higher bands are open, often the lower bands are very, very noisy. 40 and down will be very noisy. Thing to remember is that every day and hour by hour and even different positions on the Earth are different. So just because we're in a minimum doesn't mean we might have a good day or a good couple of hours or even a good hour where a strange tunnel will open up to us, you know, part of the world. So, you know, we definitely are losing the ability to just sit down at the radio at your leisure and work the high bands wherever you want. But some of the fun is catching some of those rare openings in weird bands and unexpected places. So just because the bands are going downhill, don't give up, you know. Keep listening and watch, just watch the spots, you know, and go scan the dial every now and then. It also means that the low bands are getting quieter. As we go into winter, the summer thunderstorms are gone, so the static becomes less, and 80 and 160 meters become the bands of choice. Certainly those are bands that are a little bit harder to reach for some hams due to antenna restrictions, but there's always something out there that you can do. KI0CAN, back to you, Joel.
Good to know. W2MIC, any comments?
W2MIC, I've been reading papers today on the prognostications for the coming solar cycle, and as usual, it's anybody's guess. The two interesting data points are that the total irradiance of the sun is decreasing a little bit. In other words, the sun is getting a tiny, tiny bit cooler. And for reasons, and we don't know why, and for reasons we also don't understand, the Earth's magnetic field is decreasing in strength a little bit. So it may be that even with the weak sun, the weak Earth magnetic field will still let the charged particles in and charge up the ionosphere. Generally speaking, the answer really from everybody that I'm reading is we don't know, we're just guessing. Lots of people are guessing we will see another very weak cycle, not this cycle, which is just ending, but this coming cycle. And here is where I put in a plug for the digital modes, such as PSK31, which require really not much in the way of the bands being open, and will actually transmit and receive below the noise floor. So even if the bands are not open for voice, as KI0KN and others noted, they may well be open for Morse code. If they're not open for Morse code, they may well be open for the more sophisticated digital modes that you do using just the sound card on your computer. Back to net.
Comment. Was that LEV? Go ahead, Dave, if that's you.
Yeah, I gotta get off here. I don't want to monopolize it. But Mark mentioned about the peaks and the valleys. If you look back, cycle 23 was pretty good, and they initially predicted that this past cycle 24 was going to be just a screamer. And 10 meters was going to be open 20 of the 24 hours and so on. Well, we all know that didn't happen. What I see, and I have only seen it mentioned in professional literature a few times, and Mark, you might comment on this. As the cycles have decreased from the big one two ago, I'm seeing a double hump on the peak. And that double hump, there are basically two resonances, and they don't know what causes them. But if the humps coincide, yeah, we're going to have lots of activity and excellent HF. That's not been the case the last couple cycles. I've seen two humps, and nobody really knows why. Again, science is wonderful. WZLED.
Yeah, in some of the papers I'm reading, I'm hearing these referred to as camel humps, two humps. The other datum, the way to really look at this is about 3 years into the new cycle, we can make some pretty good predictions by looking at the ratio of the sun's magnetic field to the number of sunspots. So right now, everybody's just prognosticating and guessing. Once we're 3 to 4 years into the cycle, we'll have a pretty good read on how big the cycle's going to be and how long.
Yeah, and here's another one that's picked up by the news services that's totally bogus. The magnetic field is slipping. Well, every 11 years, the north half and south half of polarizations of the sun and the spots reverse. When we start, well, actually that's used as a measure of the next cycle is when they start seeing reverse polarity on the spots and between northern and southern hemispheres. Also, as the spots form at the beginning of a cycle, they're more towards the poles. It may be 45 degrees instead of polar, but they're closer to the poles. As the cycle progresses, the spots move toward the solar equator. Again, we don't know why, but they're all indicators of when a cycle starts, stops, how it's going to be broken up, how big it is, how small it is. There's a lot, probably more we don't understand than we understand about that star at the center of our universe.
Okay, I've got a question, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because there's a few guys out there that have pretty much worked UHF, VHF, and that's pretty much it, okay? So when we start talking HF, well, what really will sunspots do? I mean, we've talked a lot about this, but I'm turning on the radio. What effect does that actually have in layman's term one way or another? And I guess I'm trying to get back to the basics for our people in here that are trying to get into HF and they don't understand that. Mark, you want to take that, or Dave, or James, or anybody?
W2MIC, well, I'll go first. What this means on the broad brush for the next 15 years is the lower bands will be open, HF bands will be open, 160, 80, 40, more than the upper bands, 10, 12, 15, 17, 20. So if you're putting up an antenna and you don't have anything, you're just getting started, you want to get the lowest bands, the longest number of meters you possibly can, because as we go through the next two-ish years of this cycle, which is going to get worse, and then 2 or 3 years as the next cycle starts up, it will be the lower bands that will be open more commonly than the upper bands. So if you're looking at buying an antenna that does 20 meters, 17, 15, 12, 10, that's probably not a real good way to go right now. If you can get something up in the air that does 160 or 80, as Kevin is doing with his Wyndham, that would be a much better approach, is to assume you'll be running on 80, 40, and maybe 20.
I've got another question for anyone who wants out there, and this is my personal question. This is going to affect 20 also?
Zero LED, well put.
Was the well put in reference to my comment?
Seem to be doubling everybody. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, in between what you were saying, Joe, I heard Dave W0LEV in the background saying well put, and I was asking if that was in reference to my comments.
Oh, absolutely, Mark. I have trouble bringing it down. Not that I can do the calculus anymore, but somebody else has got to take it. That was the zero LEV. Well put, Mark.
To ask my question, this will affect 20 also, correct?
Yes.
James, would you care to comment?
Put up an 80-meter inverted V and get a good you know, 20 is one of the most reliable bands, but it already is being affected by the low sunspot numbers, and of all the bands, it is probably the most open the most out of anything, and it's a pretty popular band. It's pretty resilient to most of this, but it is absolutely a target of the low activity numbers as well. So if you can figure out how to stretch one out, an 80 meter dipole or 80 meter inverted V or something like that, will definitely keep you in business over the next 2 years for those days that 20 is dead. And 30 is going to survive pretty well. It typically does. But as you know, that's CW and data only, so here's even a better, and that's the other thing, is you get down into the bands, 160 meters, for example, 80 meters to an extent, voice is not the prominent mode. It's not allowed on 10 meters, and it's not prominent on 160 meters. Sounds like an excellent time to go out and learn some CW.
James, beat me to it.
Another comment, Mark?
Meter CW, the bottom end of the band. Starting about, 4:35 o'clock local, I start hearing Europeans, in some cases Pacific Rim as well, on CW only. It's there, but not sideband.
Any other comments? James, did you want to continue on with whatever you wanted to talk about there as far as this goes?
Well, you know, the thing I was going to touch on a little bit were the A index, the K index, and things like the X-ray, because those numbers are typically some of the first numbers people look at in some of those banners and websites. And this is where either Mark or Dave can correct me, because I always, always, always get this backwards. I cannot remember which one is the three-hour number and which one was the daily average, the K and the A. One's planetary index, and I can't remember. But the three-hour number will give you generally sort of a quick glance as to what, you know, you might expect when you turn the dial on. First, let me stop there. Mark or Dave, which one's the three-hour number? I always forget this.
W2MIC, I have to drop.
I'm with you. I don't remember either, because I don't pay much attention to them.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, the A index is the last 3 hours averaged, and the K index is the average of the last 24 hours. Anyways, regardless of the number, the lower the better. When it's up high, you're going to see geomagnetic fields raise, and you're going to lose the higher bands. And you're going to get noise on the lower bands often. Not always, but often. So, back to the numbers, again, we've said over and over, don't put too much stock in those numbers alone, but the A and the K, you want those as low as possible. The X-ray just simply, that's exactly what that is. That's the amount of X-rays hitting the sensors here at the stations, and it is, the X-rays can cause a great deal of noise in our atmosphere. On that hamqsl.com page under the solar section, there's an excellent table in that section as well that explains each one of the numbers in sort of human understandable terms if you don't have a PhD in this stuff. So if you want to learn a little bit about what all those extra numbers mean instead of just the little good, poor, and fair flags that they have on each band, that's a good place to go. I think that's where I'll leave that for now, Joe. KI0CAN, back to you.
Any other comments? what I guess everybody's saying is we've got a cycle of 2 years, which we just kind of got to hang on. Is that what you guys are telling me? Go ahead.
Yeah, hate to say it, and that's just until the magnetic sense flips on the sunspots and we start up the curve all over again. But it won't get great 2 years, but it's on its way.
Now, one thing, I think it was it last weekend? No, it wasn't last weekend. The weekend before, we had the Worldwide DX, and that really didn't do anything for me because I'm sitting here trying to talk to people that I couldn't do. And it was basically centered around our locality, or in the Midwest, if you will. Can anybody tell me why New York could talk to these people and I couldn't talk to them?
I'll take 6 meters as an example, and even channel 2. You can be 10 miles apart on 6 meters, and one station will hear the other, and you can't hear anything. And I've experienced that here as well. The ionosphere is not a smooth mirror. It consists of a plasma, which is a conductive, gaseous conductive matter. As such, it refracts. If anybody has ever looked at a single line through a clear calcite crystal, you get two lines. The sharper line is the ordinary line, the dimmer line is the extraordinary line. The ordinary line in calcite would be analogous to almost a mirror theory. The model he uses crinkled aluminum foil, which is probably very good on a larger scale. The extraordinary ray undergoes refraction, and anything off the atmosphere is determined by the phase of those two rays. Plasma in a magnetic field, the Earth's magnetic field, dictates that it is a birefringent material. Nothing that comes off the ionosphere is plane polarized. You can transmit vertical, you can transmit horizontal, but it comes back elliptically polarized. And that's another thing I hear guys on 20, 40, 80, well, I'm running horizontal and the guy's running vertical on the other end, how can you hear me? It doesn't matter if it's off the ionosphere, it's elliptically polarized. And circle is an ellipse with equal major and minor axes. So the polarization really doesn't matter. It's all a matter of how much time, the angle of incidence, how dense the plasma is, and how strong the magnetic field is at that location. It will return the signal in very different regions, given a good dense plasma and a reasonably strong magnetic field. You really can't predict, and that's some of what Terry tries to do with the ionosondes and the Viper system, which is far more sensitive than the standard ionosondes.
W2MSC, have you got any comments, Mark?
Take the physics out of it for me, please, Mark.
Is you, Mark?
He said he had to go. I don't know where, but I think he's elsewhere.
Okay. James, KI0KN.
Yep. So let me do exactly what Dave, or at least attempt to do what Dave just asked, and that's take the physics out of it. He's exactly right. Let me see if I can simplify this. First, this is not the only piece that plays into it, but remember this. The sun has a great effect on the ionization of the ionosphere, meaning that the part of the Earth where the sun is, quote, up, is going to be ionized much heavier than the side of the Earth that it is down or dark. So that, forget everything else, forget the magnets, forget the everything else, we've got that to contend with, okay? One side of the ionosphere is going to reflect certain signals better than the other side is because of the just the pure solar radiation. New break there. Now you can add in, you know, the conditions and everything else, and as Dave said, certain parts of the ionosphere are going to be much more active than others. They will reflect better than others. The angle, what he said, he had a very key word in his description, refraction, not reflection. Reflection would indicate that the wave coming in would bounce and leave at the same angle as it goes out. Refraction is not that. It can leave a different angle. So imagine, draw a circle. You got somebody on the left side. You got the ionosphere above it. You got a station on the right side. Station on the left side, he's hitting the ionosphere. And I'm simplifying this again because if they're on opposite sides of the Earth, it's more than one reflection. It could be many bounces. But if it comes up and hits and comes off at a very oblique angle, that angle may be lined up just right for you to hear it. So you are hearing him perfect. Now let's reverse the situation. He may be transmitting at a 20-degree takeoff angle, for example. It hits the ionosphere, comes back at this very, very shallow angle and hits you. Now you transmit. You hit it. You're transmitting at a 20-degree takeoff angle. You're hitting a very different spot in the ionosphere, and where your signal refracts, if it does at all, may not land back on his receiver. Did that make sense?
Yeah, refraction is the key. I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah, and the classic example of refraction rather than reflection. Clear glass of water and put a pencil in it, the pencil bends. That's refraction, it's not reflection. It's an indication of the speed of travel of the wavefront. Indeed, in the ionosphere, the wavefront does not travel at the speed of light. The same thing with the pencil, water has a refractive index. Again, I'm trying to keep the physics out of it, but different refractive index in air, that's what bends the image of the pencil sitting in a clear glass of water.
And another thing to remember, and Dave talks about refractive index, basic way of saying that RF, light, anything travels at a different speed through a different medium. That's one of the basic principles of refraction, and exactly why the pencil looks bent when you look through it. Light travels through the water at a different speed than it travels through air. The same is true of RF, and that's why if there's an ocean between you and the person you're talking to, that plays into it too. KI0CAN.
Mads. WB0UWE. Go right ahead, my friend.
Getting back to the A and the K. Think of A as all. A is a derived from the K, which is the 3 hour. The A is the daily average. WB0UWE.
Just learned something there, Joe. Thank you, Steve. That was an excellent thing. I will probably, from this day forward, always remember that. A is for all. So there you have it. A is the, so you're going to see the A be, the A number will stay higher than the K when the K starts dropping because it's an average of over a longer period of time. Thanks for that, Steve. That was very informative.
Comments. Got a question for the net tonight. Well, the net lasted 92 minutes, which is about average. We had 16 check-ins and a lot of people listening, and I do appreciate that. Been a good conversation. We'll be back next Monday night at 6:30. Again, it is 6:30 we start. If there's no other business for the net, the repeater's open for general use. Everybody have a pleasant evening.